Hey, we're in the middle of a series to help us all navigate the journey of living generously. And so far, we have covered quite a bit of ground. If you've missed any of that, please go to the podcast, go to the YouTube channel, because it's very, very important that you put all this into context together. And by the way, if you are visiting with us today for the first time or first time in a long time, or you just get annoyed because we're talking about money, it's not something we do a lot around here. In fact, this is the first time that I remember doing a series on money, not only myself, but previous pastors as well. So this isn't something that we do all the time, and we're not after your money, especially if you're a guest here. We want to minister to you. Now, so far we've learned that our stuff is not just intended for our own consumption. In week one, we talked about living generously starts with the end in focus. And if we are going to have a meaningful life, we need to use our means as an end or to an end that is not us. And we also learned that our stuff will tell a story about us in the end. What our stuff is when we're no longer here. Last week we discovered something. We discovered that we're all rich. Remember that? Amen. Did you go away feeling blessed and just really ready to spend money and be generous because you're rich? Did you do that? You know, most people aren't good at being rich because they don't know they're rich. So we covered that last week. And we also discovered that with being rich comes some dangers. It's dangerous to be rich, but those dangers can be combated if we are learn to be content. And the greatest enemy of contentment is comparison. You remember that? You know how many times that bit me this week? When I would start talking about something else and my wife would say, "Oh, are you comparing something?" It's like, yeah. So being a preacher sometimes is not fun, you know, because you preach to yourself and then other people apply it to your life. And then we can also combat the dangers of being rich by trusting God and then by being generous. As today we're learning about living generously. We come to a guiding truth. We're going to discover a guiding truth, a principle that will undergird all of this and will make actually living generously much easier if we understand this, if we grab hold of it. We all have a relationship with money. You have a relationship with money. I have a relationship with money. And like every other relationship, it can either be fantastic or it can be miserable. Our relationships require that we spend time with it, with people, with money in this instance. It's no different. If we spend time with it and nurture it, that relationship with money becomes healthy. Our relationship with money can be looked at in several different ways. Now, there's some of you sitting here that your relationship with money is fear. You're afraid of money. You don't want to know. You let somebody else take care of that for you. If you're married, maybe it's your spouse, and you just don't even want to know because just give me the card and I can keep doing and all that, and they will take care of the other side. Some of you, your relationship with money is you have a love affair with debt, like you saw in the video. You're always maxed out with credit cards and your mortgage, and you keep redrawing that, and it's always about, I can buy more stuff if I take more money out and borrow more money. So you're having a love affair with debt. Some are collectors. These are hoarders. Some people's goal is to amass as much cash as possible. Now, saving is good, but it can also be a form of greed. We talked about that a little bit in week one. Some view money as something that needs to be spent. And you're committed to spending it well. You want to make sure that you spend your money well. And we actually encourage that. But some of you think money needs to be spent and it's fluid. It's like water running through your hands. And you got no idea even where you're spending it, no idea where it went. What should our view of money be, though? What should our money view of money be? I told you we're going to investigate a guiding truth that pulls all this together. It's a principle that will give us a proper view of money, and it is a timeless principle. It's been around for thousands of years and been proven generation after generation. 3,000 years ago, there was a guy called David, and he was a king. He was the king of Israel. And his journey to becoming the king of Israel was not a simple one. He had gone through many personal difficulties growing up as a shepherd and then being targeted by Saul through the years. And then as he became the king, he was leading God's people through their journey to become a nation. They became a nation. Israel was flourishing. All the foes were defeated. And David was rich. And then David looked out and he became aware of something. He said, wow, I'm living in a palace. It's all nice. And God is still living in this portable tent, the tabernacle. So he set out to design and plan, architect a temple to build for his God. He allocated funds from the national treasury for that. And then he contributed himself. Some scholars estimate David's personal contribution was $14 billion. By the way, for our pledging campaign, I'm not committing $14 billion. And if I could, you should be asking a lot of questions. He then challenged the nation to give towards that project, the temple, and they all gave willingly. And when that happened, they celebrated. It says in 1 Chronicles chapter 29, it says, they rejoiced because they had given freely and wholeheartedly to the Lord. Can you imagine that? After we take up the offering and everybody's given freely and wholeheartedly, we're rejoicing. We're having a party because we just got to give. Wouldn't that be great? We've never seen it in a church, but hey, we want to do new things, exciting things that are different. Maybe we could try that sometime. Then David, after all that giving came in, David prayed. And we have a record of that prayer, a historical record in the book of 1 Chronicles in the Old Testament, which is the Jewish scriptures. In verse 10, it says this, then David praised the Lord in the presence of the whole assembly. O Lord, the God of our ancestor Israel, may you be praised forever and ever. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness, the power, the glory, the victory, and the majesty. So all the giving came in to build the temple. And David assessed the situation and his response. He had a moment there and he was excited. And he said, God, this is all about you. He didn't say to all the people, I'm sure he did say, but in his prayer, he didn't thank all the people and say, great job, guys, well done, you guys are so generous. He said, God, this was all about you. Remember, David is the king of Israel, the greatest superpower on the planet at that point, but he understood it was all about God. He went on to explain in verse 11, everything in the heavens and on earth is yours, O Lord. And this is your kingdom. We adore you as the one who is over all things. There we learn from David that God owns everything. God owns everything. You can see where this is going. David's perspective was that it was all God's. They were just moving some of God's stuff from one place to another to build that temple for him. And then in verse 12, David says, wealth and honor come from you alone, for you rule over everything. Power and might are in your hand, and at your discretion, people are made great and given strength. There, David's telling us that God is the source of everything. Not only does he own everything, but he is also the source of everything. Wealth, we know, comes from God. We see that in what David wrote. But not only that, but honor, power, and might all comes from God. David was saying this, everything that makes life enjoyable, everything that makes life livable, everything that makes us able to accomplish anything, all comes from God. It all comes from him. Now that may have been a shock to someone, some of the people who were listening to David's prayer. They knew David, and if you think about David, he was a hard worker. They had seen him work hard. They had seen him lead them in battle. They had watched his personal sacrifice for the nation. And now David says, only way any of that happened was God. He was the source of all of that. He goes on, verse 13, our God, we thank you and praise your glorious name. But who am I and who are my people that we could give anything to you? Everything we have has come from you, and we give you only what you first gave us. Not only does God own everything, not only is God the source of everything, but God provides what we give. That's what David is saying here. He's saying, I'm not even worthy to be generous, to be called generous. He understood that what he had already and what everyone else had that they had given back was God's already to start with. He even said this in verse 16. This is so cool. He says, "Oh Lord our God, even this material we have gathered to build a temple to honor your holy name comes from you. It all belongs to you." David's a rich person. This is not the perspective we normally hear from rich people. Most people want to take ownership when they've been generous, and they want to be recognized for their accomplishments. I'm reminded of the Seinfeld episode where George bought a salad and Elaine gave it, and George got ticked off for that. It was my big salad. You remember that, right? Look it up on YouTube for those. Anybody not know Seinfeld? That's the night crowd. They wouldn't even know Seinfeld. Anyway, many over the history of churches have decided that I'll be generous. But one thing I really thought was cool, you know, there used to be these things called pews in churches, right? Remember those? They're really hard, kept people awake. Now we've got nice, comfortable, padded things. And sometimes the church would raise money. And I remember going in churches and seeing on the back of the pews a little brass plate. It said, "This pew donated by Fred Smith," right? Remember those kinds of things? You know, and I'm not saying that's a wrong thing, but people have had buildings named after them. Generally speaking, those people actually aren't looking for that. It's been thrust upon them. But David's perspective was very different. He didn't say, "I want to build a temple and name it after me." He said, "This is all about God." David said, "Who am I? Who are we to even say we're giving you anything? It's all yours anyway." Now, I'm going to make some people really nervous here. Not because I'm drinking water. This is why you don't hear me talk about tithing, this principle that we're learning from David. If you're not familiar with church language, tithing just means a tenth, a 10%. And just to be clear, if you've determined that giving a tithe is right for you, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's a good thing. In fact, personally, we give a tithe plus. Just the way we roll, the way we do things, but not because we believe that it's a requirement that Jesus has put upon us. You need to process this with me for a second. You see, the problem with looking at it as a legal requirement, as a law that we need to tithe, we need to give that 10%, is say that fosters a mentality that giving 10% to God is, I'm giving you part of my money, right? I'm going to give you 10% of my money, God. And I want you to think that through. We make a dollar, and we give 10 cents off that. And I can imagine God is, "Wow! I gave you a dollar, and you gave me 10 cents back." Yeah? And then we make $10, and we give a dollar, and make $100, we give $10, make $1,000, and then we give $100, then we make $10,000. Oh, wait a minute. That's about where we stop. Because the numbers are getting too big. And it's like, "Oh, wait a minute, I'm giving enough already." That kind of a mentality. The mentality of that is, if I give God 10%, then I can do whatever I want with the other 90. See, that's what that fosters. That's why you don't hear me talk about it. I'm not preaching against it, but I'm just suggesting to you there's a better way to think about it. See, when we start with the presumption that it's all God's anyway, the question changes. See, the wrong question is, how much of my money will I give to God? That's not the right question. The right question is, how can I honor Him with everything that I have? See, it's not about giving generously. It's about living generously. Taking all of the resources that God has given us and honoring Him with that. To help us understand this a little more clearly, and in case you're wondering if we're just going back to an Old Testament story and David and learning from him, yes, we are. But Jesus talks about this too. There's a story he tells in Matthew chapter 25. It is so familiar, I'm not even going to read it for you. I'm just going to give you a snapshot. It said, there was a man who took a long journey. And the man in the story represents God. And it said, before he went on this journey, he called three servants together and he said, "Here's my money, I want you to take care of it." He gave the first servant five bags of silver, the second servant he gave two bags, and the third servant he gave one bag. A bag of silver, scholars estimate, was between 15 and 20 years' wages for an average laborer, okay? So even the guy that got one bag had a sack full of money, all right? And the story goes on. The man who is represented by God, or represents God, took his journey and came back. The guy that he'd given five bags of silver came back and he had five extra. He said, here's your money. And the man said, that's awesome. You did an amazing job. Let's celebrate. Let's have a party. And I'm going to trust you with even more next time. And the guy he gave two bags, same thing. He says, here's your two bags you gave me to start with, and I made two more. And the owner said, hey, that's awesome. That's great. Celebrate. I'm going to trust you with even greater things. Third guy, one bag. He had taken and hidden his bag in the earth. He had dug a hole and buried it. So he unearthed it, took it back, said, here's your money back. And of course, he had just seen what happened with the other two. And he said, hey, I was scared because I know you're a tough guy. You're really harsh sometimes in that. And I didn't want to lose your money, so I was afraid. And I buried it. Here's your money back. The owner said, hey, you're a wicked servant. You could have at least put the money in the bank so I could have earned interest. What's the point of that whole story? I would suggest to you, you need to consider two questions. What percentage of the money was the man's who went on a journey? 100%. All of it. What percentage of it was the servant's? Come on. We just gave 100 to the man, all right? Come on. Even if you're slow on math, I love you, sweetheart. Zero. 0% was the servant's. It was all the man's. See, the servants weren't owners. They were money managers. They were given the responsibility of managing someone else's money, other people's money. And that's the lesson for us today. We are not owners. We are stewards. So if God owns everything, provides everything, he's the source of all things, this makes perfect sense. God entrusts money and things to us to take care of them on his behalf. When we start viewing money and stuff from this perspective, it will make life easier and decisions easier. Have you ever borrowed something from someone that was valuable? Maybe their car, something like that, a trailer, lots of money. How did you treat that thing? Were you more careful with their thing than you are with your things? I hope you were. If you want to borrow something from me, that's what I expect. When I borrow something, if I borrowed your car, it would come back with more petrol in it than it started with, and it would come back clean, cleaner than it was when I got it, and all that, because I believe if you loaned me something, I need to take better care of that than I would even my own to return it to you. Think about this in a big picture. You and I are money managers. The penny's already dropped for you in that. Everything we have comes from God. But what does that even mean? In practical terms, some of you have a financial planner that helps you take care of your money. I went and visited one time because I recognized I needed a little bit of help. And he said, well, to open up a folder will cost you $1,100. It's the last time I talked to the financial planner. So, because he has a plan, all right, and he's going to make a lot of money on mine. And I know some of you are going to come up here, hey, you really need a financial planner. You really need, that's fine, you can talk to me. But if you have a financial planner and you entrust that person to manage your money, you give them instructions and direction, you tell them the outcomes that you want, and then they manage it, right? They invest the money on your behalf. It's not their money. They're investing it for you. They are accountable to you for what they do with your money. Now imagine at the end of the year, your financial planner comes to you and gives you a report. And they say, hey, I invested 10% of your money in this over here, and it doubled. Great result. But I also needed a new iPhone and a new car, and the wife was sick, and I needed to pay some bills there. So I used some of your money for myself. And then about 50% of your money, I got no idea where it went. Now, anybody going to be looking for a new financial planner? A finance manager? Yeah? Yeah, we're not going to put up with that kind of thing if somebody else is looking after our money. It's bringing us back to us, a take-home challenge. You and I are not owners. We are stewards. We are stewards, not owners. And as stewards, as money managers, you and I, we need to be knowing where the money is going. All right? If I asked you today, tell me how you spend your money over the last month or so. Some of you be right on top of it. You pull out your spreadsheets and everything, give me a report, and it'd be amazing. Some of you say, I got no clue. I didn't know I spent $100 on coffee last month. You wouldn't have any idea. We all need a plan. Whether you make a lot or you make a little. Some people say, oh, I don't have enough money to track, so that would be too easy, and I'm not going to bother. Others would say, well, I've actually got too much money, and it'd be too hard to track, so that I'm not going to be bothered with that. Now, we're not talking about a budget. We're talking about tracking your spending, all right? Because budgets, again, I'm probably going to make a lot of people mad today, but that's okay. I like that. I love emails. I'm not talking about budgets because budgets actually are a predictor of the future. How many of you can predict the future? Okay? The other thing about budgets, and budgets aren't bad, okay? I'm just saying they're ineffective. The other thing about budgets is that you put the budget together, and then what do you do with it? File it away, right? When do you look at it again? Maybe next year. That's actually good if you're doing that. We never look at it again unless we need to redo our budget because our money's a mess and all of that, right? So I'm not talking about budgeting here. I'm talking about tracking. So why track? Well, a few reasons. If I have to track it, it's going to cause me to pause, all right? I've got this activity tracker on my wrist, and it closes rings, all right? And when I first got that, I didn't even want it. I was like, yeah, whatever. But at the end of the day, if my rings aren't close to being closed, you might find me at 11 o'clock at night doing star jumps in my kitchen, all right? You might. I'm not saying you would, but actually you wouldn't find that because you're not coming to my house at 11 o'clock at night, most likely. But why would I do that? Because something is tracking my activity. So I'm more accountable to make sure that happens. That's why I walk so much when I'm preaching now, right? So, just kidding. It's because I'm tracking it. It'll cause you to pause if you're tracking it, but it will also help you identify the reality of how you're spending your money. I do most of my day-to-day stuff, business, with my credit card. We earn frequent flyer miles and pay it off at the end of the month. Well, the other morning or afternoon, I can't even remember, Deanna and I were sitting at the kitchen table, and she pulls up the app that has our credit card spending on it. She doesn't do that very often. She leaves that kind of stuff to me for the most part. And she started going down through, and it said KFC, McDonald's, and this and that, and three or four other things. And I'm starting to think, two reasons. Activity tracker, right? All right. KFC and McDonald's, not great. The staff would tell you KFC is my lunch of choice. But the other thing was I was being confronted by what I didn't even know because it was all there. It's like, wow, that's where we're spending that much money. It's confronting because you actually realize how much you spend on yourself. For some of you, if you track it, it's going to show you how little you spend on yourself. So I'm going to give you a very practical challenge. Here's the application to the message today. For the next 30 days, I want you to track your spending. Every dollar you spend. You're going to do that in three ways. First, you're going to document it. Every dollar you spend, document. Every coffee, every thing that you give into a charity bin, document it. Several ways you can do that. You can go old school and write it down on paper. Actually, I think that's very effective because when you have to write something, there's just something about that. If you like using spreadsheets, you can do it on a spreadsheet. There's all kinds of apps out there. You can track it in your phone every time you spend something. There's a couple of links on our website under the Living Generously series, under the podcast resources. There's a paper you can print out, or there's a spreadsheet you can download to help you with that. Track every time you spend money. Start with your bills, like your mortgage and rent and whatever. The easy ones, you know those are going to be there. Go ahead and put them in. But then the coffees, the lunches, the gifts, everything else you do, write it down for 30 days. Then look at it. After that 30 days, look at it. Some of you will be excited. You say, wow, I like where my money's going. Some of you will be shocked. Some say, wow, I didn't know. Didn't know I was spending that much in that category. And then finally, adjust it. If you're not happy with what you see, make some adjustments. Say, wow, I didn't know I spent $3,000 last month on coffee. That's a little bit excessive. I'm only going to do $2,000 next month. Yeah. I'm feeling you, bro. I'm feeling you. Yeah, some of you are sitting there thinking, hang on, this is church. This is a very practical application today. This isn't very spiritual. Can I suggest to you that how you manage God's money is one of the most spiritual things you do in your life? Knowing where the money is going is vital if we're going to live generously. As I close, I'm going to remind you, we're managers, not owners. God is the owner, and he has entrusted tremendous resources to you and I. Question is, how are you and how am I going to manage what God has entrusted to us? The question is not, what will I give God? The question is, how am I going to honor God with all he's given me? All of it. And friends, if we're going to live generously, we need to make a start today by figuring out and understanding where the money is going. Father, thank you so much for your word. Thank you for David's perspective and how he teaches us that it was all yours anyway. Thank you for the parable Jesus told that brought that truth back home again, that you own everything. You're the source of everything. You even provide what we give. Thank you, God, so much for being so generous. Lord, as we consider even looking at how we're spending our money that you have given us, the resources you've given us, I pray that you would not just make us feel guilty, Lord, but I don't believe that you do that. But may your spirit convict us if we need it. May he guide us into how we can adjust. And Lord, may we honor and glorify you with every bit of everything that you've given to us. In Jesus' name.